It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Was hard to believe we're nearing the end of August, August 24th and 25th, depending on when you're listening to this. Last weekend, we had Dr. Joe Arante, who's a vice president at Northeast Delta Dental and a colleague of today's guest. And we kind of teed up trends in dental, trends in dental school. And we also talked about the Health Rural Wellness Program, which is powered by Previsor. So 2 weeks in a row, I have a dentist. And this weekend, joining me on the 24th and 25th is Dr. Don Cox, who's a dental director at Northeast Delta Dental. And we're going to have some good gum talk, Don, correct?
Correct.
Awesome. And of course, tell us about your training, because you're actually a periodontist, so this is your area of expertise. So of course, you've been on the show before, but now we're really going to, no pun intended, drill down into your area of expertise.
Well, I am a periodontist. I used to teach and retired and came to Delta Dental a few years ago. I think 4 years now.
Great. So what is gingivitis and periodontitis?
Up until recently, I think people thought they were very much the same disease, that gingivitis, which is an inflammation of the gum, led to periodontitis, which is an inflammation of the attachment underneath the gum, which loses bone around the teeth. I think most investigators now believe these are probably two separate diseases, both caused by bacteria.
Great. And how do I know if I have a symptom or if I have gingivitis or periodontitis?
Gingivitis, you know yourself. You look in the mirror, your gums are bleeding, they're red, they're swollen. That's gingivitis. You don't need a dentist to tell you. Periodontitis, on the other hand, results in the loss of bone around teeth. And more often than not, it's up to the dentist to tell you you have periodontitis. Although in later stages of periodontitis, your teeth may become loose and even fall out.
And so what's the cause?
Oh, that's a good question. We know that bacteria are necessary for both. We think that gingivitis is simply an inflammatory response to the bacteria. It causes redness, bleeding, swelling. Periodontitis is also an inflammatory response to the bacteria. But investigators are starting to believe it's a form of autoimmune disease, very similar to rheumatoid arthritis, scleroderma, or other autoimmune diseases. In this case, the immune response is activated by the bacteria that live around the tooth. And in the course of that inflammation, self-tissue is destroyed, in this case, the bone around the teeth.
So, like probably most things in life, smoking is a negative as it relates to this. So how can smoking affect periodontal disease? And can smoking ironically mask sometimes the disease?
No, excellent question on both counts. Smoking dramatically affects periodontal disease, as Tom mentioned, it can mask periodontal disease. If you look at a smoker with periodontal disease, usually they have less gingivitis, not more gingivitis, than a non-smoker, which can fool someone into believing there's nothing wrong. However, they develop dramatically greater bone loss over time.
So what is the physiology behind, what does the smoking do to mask it?
There's no definitive evidence of a cause-effect relationship right now, but we think lack of oxygen to the gingival tissues in smokers precipitates the loss of attachment.
Yeah, that's what I would have guessed. So thank you for that explanation. So again, kind of like smoking, nutrition probably plays some role in this. So tell us about that.
Actually, nutrition probably plays less of a role than you might think. Many years have been spent looking at nutrition and periodontal disease, but the only definitive relationship that's ever really been shown is between vitamin C deficiency and periodontal disease. P People who don't take adequate amounts of vitamin C can develop a lot of gingivitis, but more importantly, they can actually develop severe periodontitis to the extent that their teeth actually fall out.
So you're, you know, when you practice, I mean, you've probably seen a lot of cases. So you try to counsel your patient on, you know, quit smoking, et cetera. So, like, what's been the most effective way of getting a patient to change behavior in a good way?
Yeah, the behavior that's most important, of course, is brushing and flossing. Everything.
And Dr. Joe mentioned that last week. We were saying, like, you know, dentists can do. I've heard this once. I've heard it 200 times from dentists. You know, we can do everything while the patient is in the chair, but if they don't brush and floss in between visits, we undo a lot of the good work that we've done.
Absolutely. The only effective treatment for periodontitis that we have today is brushing and flossing. And when you go to the periodontist, their goal is to enable you to be able to brush and floss. Periodontal surgery is to enable you to brush and floss. Periodontal treatment is to enable you to brush and floss. And that's largely because the bacteria that are around your teeth that are contribute to periodontal disease build up in 24 to 72 hours after removing them. So you can't really go to the dentist every 3 days to have your teeth cleaned. You have to do it yourself, you have to do it at home, and you have to do it every day.
Great point. What about the role of genetics? I mean, Dr. Joe mentioned, you know, last week, you know, some of us, depending on our genetics, you know, with the Provisor program, HOW program, we now know that some of us need to do more than, you know, two cleanings a year. Some could be less. So I'm assuming genetics also might have a role in periodontal disease.
Very much so. Probably the single greatest factor in determining the extent and severity of periodontal disease is genetic background. There's a racial contribution. There are some forms of periodontal disease that are more prevalent in certain racial populations, Asians and black populations. There's certain periodontal diseases that are more prevalent in women than in men.
What about age? I mean, young children get gingivitis?
Virtually everyone can get gingivitis. Young children, teenagers, matter of fact, gingivitis is prevalent in teenagers. It's called puberty gingivitis, as it's hormonally related. Pregnant women, maternal gingivitis, pregnancy gingivitis is very common and can be quite severe.
Are all the teeth involved? Is the whole mouth involved in this play?
Most often, not equally. Periodontal disease occurs in patterns. Periodontitis occurs in patterns, I should say. When the periodontist looks at you on the x-ray, he might see just your back teeth involved. He might see your back teeth and your very front teeth involved, or he might see all of your teeth involved. And the pattern of periodontitis appears to be genetically inherited.
Okay, so we talked about brushing and flossing as a key in preventing periodontal disease. Are there other things that we as human beings, besides going to our dentist regularly, can do? And is either gingivitis or periodontitis reversible?
I'll answer the second one first. Gingivitis is known to be fully reversible, usually within 7 to 14 days. Experimental studies on gingivitis that were conducted in the 1970s had shown generally most gingivitis resolves in about 7 days. If you start brushing and flossing and you do it well and there's no tartar around your teeth, the gingivitis will disappear in most people in about 7 days. Periodontitis is thought to be non-reversible. The attachment loss that occurs around teeth in periodontitis remains lost around those teeth. The object in periodontal treatment is to stop the further progression of bone loss or attachment loss around the teeth.
So what about periodontal surgery? I mean, what exactly is that? And is it, if done successfully, can it turn things around?
Well, as I said, it can't turn things around, but it can halt the progression. Periodontal surgery, there's a number of procedures which are done to treat periodontitis, but they all have the same basic objective, and that's to reduce the depth of the space that exists between the gum and the tooth so that you can get a toothbrush in and so that you can get dental floss in between the teeth.
Got it. Now, when I was growing up, our grandparents said, use baking soda. So is that apocryphal? Is that an old wives' tale? Or is there some efficacy with baking soda?
No, there's no efficacy. That started with two articles that were published by an investigator at the NIH back in the late 70s, an individual named Paul Kies. And the articles were in less than scientific journals. One was in Mademoiselle magazine, and the other was in Modern Maturity magazine.
Okay. Not exactly scientifically vetted then.
No, but it forced the NIH to award three large contracts to investigate the efficacy because of the public outcry, people thinking that the periodontal profession was hiding a secret treatment. And the studies, of course, showed no efficacy. But it made Arm & Hammer what it is today.
Wow. Good story. So periodontal surgery, if unfortunately you that ends up being what needs to be done, how long does it take to heal?
It's varied over time. The way it used to be done 20 years ago, 30 years ago, was largely more painful and took longer to heal. And usually you were comfortable after about 14 days. Periodontal surgery, the way it's done now, is less invasive, more comfortable for the patient, and usually patients are feeling pretty darn comfortable even right after the surgeries, and certainly very comfortable in brushing their teeth within about 7 days.
Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio with Dr. Don Cox, our dental director at Northeast Delta Dental, who works with Dr. Joe Arante, who you met last week on the radio show. Joe last week was talking about trends in dental school. We're also talking about the HOW, or Health Through a Wellness Program, and Previsor, and also some other trends, overall macro trends in dentistry. This weekend, we want to focus in on periodontitis and gingivitis with Dr. Don Cox, who specializes in that area. But Don also is responsible for the professional claims review at Northeast Delta Dental. So time permitting, we might get into some of those concepts. Quick shout out to my running friends last week. Thank you for showing up in Londonderry on a Saturday night to run the Boot, Scoot, and Boogie. And 2 weeks before that, thank you for running the Epson 4 Mile Road Race on Epson Home Day, which Northeast Delta Dental sponsored. And as far as the Boot, Scoot, and Boogie race, it's part of the Northeast Delta Dental, you know, points chase series. So there was a great turnout for a Saturday night in Londonderry. But this weekend, we're back to really our core, what we do at Northeast Delta Dental, and that's oral health. So we've been talking about gingivitis and periodontitis with Dr. Don Cox. So let's segue a little bit into something called trench mouth, which does not sound good, but I'll let you explain that. And what are some other names for trench mouth?
Trench mouth was the original name of the disease. It was identified during World War I in the trenches of Europe, where soldiers who were suffering malnutrition developed a severe, painful ulceration around the margins of the gingiva in both the upper and lower jaws. And they didn't know what was causing it. It turns out that it's caused by bacteria, a certain very special type of bacteria, fusiform bacteria and spirochetes, similar to the bacteria that causes syphilis. And it's seen in people who are under stress, lack sleep, that are poorly nourished, and it's easily resolved by simply cleaning up their mouths, and if absolutely necessary nowadays, giving them an antibiotic.
Great. So it dates back to the World War I trenches, because of course everybody's heard of trench foot, so this trench mouth. Interesting.
Interesting enough, we see it now in a similar situation during final exam time at universities. It's predominantly seen in younger people around that age, soldiers, graduate students, undergraduate students, all going through their final exams.
And so it's a combination of stress, not enough sleep, and not taking care of your, not brushing and flossing?
Absolutely.
Wow. And even in the younger folks?
It's called an opportunistic infection. The bacteria are there all the time, but they don't take over unless you're severely malnourished, tired, under severe stress, etc.
So in preparing for the show, you've used two acronyms, NUG and NUP. Tell us what those are and who, and I'm assuming that's the more fancy term for trench mouth, but tell us.
I hesitate using it, but yeah, the trench mouth hasn't been called trench mouth in a long time. It's called, after that, it was called acute necrotizing ulcerative gingivitis. Since that time, and what was firmly established at an international meeting 2 years ago, is the term NUG, or just necrotizing ulcerative gingivitis. But another term was also developed, necrotizing ulcerative periodontitis, wherein the disease progresses, if untreated, to actually the destruction of bone around the teeth.
Wow. All right. So let's kind of now segue a little bit into sort of macro observations that you've made, and you've been a practitioner for many years. You've been in the Northeast Delta Dental for, you know, for several years. And so in general, and Dr. Joe touched on this a little bit last week, but are we seeing, in terms of education at dental schools and in the actual practice, are we seeing less, if you will, drilling and filling and more ways of trying to, you know, intercept the disease and prevent the carry from occurring? What is kind of your observations just looking at all the data that you see and claims and so on?
Absolutely. Over the years, the incidence of caries has dramatically dropped. The emphasis on prevention has dramatically increased. Likewise, the emphasis on preventing periodontal disease has dramatically increased. The incidence of periodontitis has decreased as a result of the efforts. The incidence of caries has dramatically decreased as a result of water fluoridation, fluoride supplements, topical fluoride, sealants. In fact, it's almost night and day between when I started in dentistry and today.
Wow. Now, you mentioned sealants, so we've made a broad reference to the Provisor program and Health Rural Wellness, and we talked a little bit more detail last week. And so my Provisor score, my Health Rural Wellness score is 3, which means I'm entitled via Northeast Delta Dental's benefit plan to the enhanced benefits, which one of those things are applying the adult fluoride varnish upon the completion of my cleaning. So what is fluoride varnish?
Fluoride varnish was originally developed by a company for desensitizing teeth that are sensitive to cold or touch. It morphed into a treatment to prevent dental caries. Currently, it's being used off-label. It's not approved by the FDA for that use, but it's so widely used for that purpose, and no detrimental side effects have ever been shown, that it's become the standard of care now in the dental industry.
And similarly, we have a pretty vibrant sealant coalition in the Concord area, and I know looking at the data, the sealants, at least with regard to children, seems to have helped. So tell us what sealant is, and if I'm a mom and dad listening to this and my dentist talks about sealants to you about your children, what exactly is a sealant? And from your perspective, is it working?
Sealants have changed, and they're working more than anyone originally expected they would. Caries, or tooth decay, requires bacteria. And the bacteria that cause the acid, that manufactured the acid, that caused demineralization of the tooth, that is really the definition of caries, or tooth decay, need food supply. They need, they're anaerobic, they need oxygen. And if you prevent them from having that food supply, prevent them from having a hiding place where they can latch onto the tooth, and prevent them from having oxygen, you don't get dental caries. What we've recently found, and what you know, and sealants which used to be entirely preventive, now they're being used for treatment too. You can put a sealant on an early carious lesion and seal in the bacteria, which subsequently die. They can't continue to produce the carious lesion. And if it's a very minor lesion, this might be a permanent treatment for that particular lesion.
Great. So for the last couple of minutes of our show this weekend, Dr. Don, I'd like to kind of do what I call the lightning round. I'm going to pose a series of questions that you can give short answers to. So if I have a choice between a manual toothbrush and an electric toothbrush, what would you say?
Whichever you prefer. Whichever
gets you to brush.
Whichever gets you to brush, yeah. The evidence is that there's no real difference between the two.
But whatever gets
you to... In spite of what the electric toothbrush company
says. There you go. But whatever gets you to brush.
Whatever gets you to brush.
Electric toothbrush. I prefer a manual one, and I love doing it, so... But we have other people that like the electric toothbrush, so whatever gets us to brush. Second question, do you feel that there is better understanding between the medical profession and dental profession, or maybe a better way of putting it, better communication between, let's say, a pediatrician who is seeing a baby and the dentist who really needs to see that baby by roughly age one or when the first tooth erupts? Do you think there's better communication between, you know, dentists and physicians?
When I went to dental school, which was way back when, there was essentially no communication. The medical students, when I went to dental school, had no dental education whatsoever. The residents at our hospital had no dental education. That's changed dramatically. Day and night difference. Most dental schools now have dentistry incorporated into the curriculum. Most residency programs have active dental education as part of the curriculum for the residents.
So there's a great deal more of cooperation, and people are understanding. As you know, Don, I end every speech with, you can't have good oral health without good oral health. So it's great that the head is being connected to the body, both in terms of oral health and, you know, and mental health. Okay, next lightning round question. So I go into a drugstore, supermarket, and I see a plethora of toothpaste. What should I be looking for?
You want a fluoridated toothpaste. Fluoridated toothpaste have been shown to be most effective. Most of the fluoridated toothpaste now are sodium monofluorophosphate, but there are still some stannous fluoride toothpastes on the market. I think Crestals have some, and they've been associated with staining on the teeth. It's superficial staining, but it does have to be removed. It's because of the tin ion and the stannous fluoride.
So you want to look for fluoride in the ingredients.
Yeah, there are pyrophosphates in some toothpaste that will say tartar control formula. Colgate and Crest are the major manufacturers of these. And they do work. They reduce tartar about 30% in studies that have been done. And the tartar that forms on your teeth is softer and easier to remove by the dentist or the hygienist. However, there's some incidence of allergic reaction to the tartar control formula toothpaste. So if you're not allergic to them, they're a great thing to use if you tend to build up a lot of tartar. Most of the tooth whitening toothpaste do not work. Consumer Reports said the same thing. What haven't I covered?
Great. So look for that fluoride in the ingredients. So one final quick question. Obviously, you know, the dental profession is evolving. It's still listed as one of the top professions that people aspire to. So any advice to a student who's considering dental school? Still a great profession?
Yes, evolving, changing, but still a wonderful profession.
And you can really feel good because you're basically improving the lives of citizens. So thank you, Dr. Don, for joining me this weekend.
Thank you, Tom.